This is a production of Cornell University.
Welcome again, everybody. Thank you for being here. Andrea, you ready to begin with roll call?
I am. First off, Adrian Durant.
Present.
Alan Mittman.
Present.
I'm here. Anise Schaap.
Anise is out today.
Okay. Brandon Fortenberry.
Brandon's here, sorry.
Oh, interwebs. Okay. Brenda Fisher. I think Brian Goodell is still out.
Yes, Brian's still out.
Deborah Howell is not here today. Derek Barrett.
Here.
Ellen Miller.
Here.
Hey Depew.
He's out.
Jackie Crickey.
I'm here.
Jamie Duong.
Here.
Jeremy Stewart.
Here.
Jessica Townley. Jessica Withers is here. Joe Canella.
I don't see him.
Nope. Justin Chandler. Michelle Oparco. Kate Supran.
I'm here.
Kit Tannenbaum. She might be a little late.
Yes, she might be.
Christy Mahoney.
I'm here.
Lisa Zacharias is not going to be able to join us today. Marcus Brooks. Marcy Benda.
Marcy is here.
Maren Cherry.
I'm here.
Yay. Good to see you. Stacy Coyle.
I'm here.
Stephanie Rizzo.
I am here.
Okay. And I think that's everybody I have. Back to you.
Great. Thank you. All right. I'll read the land acknowledgement. Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Goyokono, the Cayuga Nation. The Goyokono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of Goyokono dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of Goyokono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. Thanks again, everyone, for being here. And for any of the EA members who arrived in the last minute or two, if you would rename yourself with EA in front of your name, that's helpful. Our main event today is a visit from President Pollack and Mary Opperman. They'll be here around 12:30. I'll remind everyone the meeting is being recorded and live transcription is available if you need to use that or want to use that. Since we have a couple of minutes before they join us, I did want to give you all an update on the possible follow-up open forum after the university held leadership held a town hall earlier this month. What's happened is that there have been some school-focused town halls this week. So leadership is asked to reassess after those, see how those go. Executive committee, I let Mary Opperman know that we're concerned about the units that don't host a town hall and making sure their staff are up to date as everyone else. So it's still on the radar, but again, it's really just in a holding pattern. So thanks for your patience with that. It was originally very urgent and then slowed right down, and I may have jumped the gun by emailing you all. Since we had a few minutes, I thought we would start just to We had a question, EA members submitted questions for President Pollack in advance. And one of the questions was, what are you most looking forward to? Oh, we have minutes to approve. Oh my gosh. Thank you. Sorry about that. I was so excited to get moving on our fun question. Thanks, Wendy. So we do have minutes to approve, and they were in the packet. What are they? They are the December 15th minutes. I'm sorry. So do we have a motion to amend or a motion to approve those minutes? EA members can raise their hand. Ellen?
We move to approve the minutes as written.
We have a motion to approve. Is there a second? Marin, thank you. And we go by unanimous consent. So not seeing any opposition, those minutes are approved. Thanks for the reminder again, sorry about that. So yes, one of the questions someone submitted for the president was, what are you most looking forward to in the spring semester? And I just thought it would be nice, executive committee actually, thought it would be nice to just start off with something like that as we wait for the president and Mary to join us. So I will start just to get things going, and EA members, feel free to put your hand up, or if you wanna just participate in chat, that's fine, but because this is just something fun to get us started, our first meeting of 2022. So I am looking forward to Dragon Day. I would love to see it this year, and spring flowers, those are always a favorite. Anyone else? Oh, a new baby in May for Jeremy. Congrats. I think we've had quite a few babies in the EA lately. 62 days until spring. Anyone else have things they're looking forward to this spring? Always looking forward to the end of winter. Mm-hmm.
Ellen has his hand raised.
Oh, did I see Ellen's hand up? Hi, Ellen.
Hi, everybody. I'm looking forward to being an out-of-towner in California to a time when I can feel comfortable flying on a plane and visiting Ithaca this spring.
I hope you can do that, Ellen.
We'll see.
When's the last time you were back in Ithaca, Ellen?
Say that again?
When's the last time you were here?
Last time I was in Ithaca would have been, about 4 years ago. So happy to come back.
Couple of minutes, and hopefully someone else has exciting thoughts about the spring, or we'll see. We have a preset, as we did in November, we have a preset schedule with the president. So the committee chairs will give their updates, and then the president will give some remarks and answer the pre-submitted questions, Andrea will be reading those for us, which I'm very grateful for her taking point on that again.
I just also wanted to say thank you for all of the great pre-submitted questions. And we only have 15 minutes to be able to go through those. Unfortunately, we won't be able to get through them all, but incredible, thoughtful, timely questions.
And then if there's time at the end, we'll have time for new business, open discussion, or adjourning, as we always have that option as well. Oh, Marcy, your hand was up.
Yep, just a quick question. How long will she be with us from 12:30 to
1:15?
Thank you.
Ellen?
I just wanted to say one thing for the spring. It's a little early to be thinking about this, but I'm excited for the employee assembly elections. I think it's always really fun to see new people getting involved, and that's a fun time for us. So I'm looking forward to that.
That's true. That is coming up. Christine, the president actually really enjoys hearing from the committees. That's where the bulk, as you know, as a chair, that's where the bulk of our work is done. So she really appreciates hearing from them. Marcy?
I'm sorry to be a meeting hog, but maybe we can keep our committee updates brief. I know I will. Try.
I was just thinking, given that we've just provided updates to her a month ago, or I feel like it was just a month ago, there's not much activity that we've done except brainstorming for spring initiatives. I'm more than happy to offer my time.
I think that the brief updates would be good. I see President Pollack is here. Hi, President Pollack.
Hello, how are you all?
We took one of your questions and did ask people what they're most looking forward to this spring semester.
Oh, good.
I think we're still waiting for Mary, but if you want to chime in on what you're looking forward to.
What I'm looking forward to, you know, I actually love that question, because sometimes I feel like it's just so easy to forget about all the good things going on and we focus only on the pandemic. But you know, if you look around, the whole community has just worked so hard to let us continue to provide education and do path-bracing research that impacts the world. So I'm looking forward to all that continuing. Our philanthropic campaign is underway, and I'm especially excited about the progress we're making in raising money for expanded financial aid. The new Brooks School of Public Policy launched, and I'm looking forward to watching that take shape. It just launched last fall. We continue to have incredible research discoveries. I don't know if you saw last week, I think it was in the Cornell Chronicle, there was a story I was particularly intrigued about, small, low-cost modular satellites that Professor Mason Peck and his students developed, and that's going to help enable autonomous spacecraft. Those just launched, no, they didn't launch yet. They're going to be launched later this spring. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with them. Our North Campus residential facilities opened, two of them this fall, and the new dining hall is going to open this spring. I had the opportunity to be in there earlier with some students making pizza. There's a discovery kitchen. So, you know, basically, while the pandemic really does, you know, I don't want to minimize it, weighs on all of us, there's just also a lot of really good things going on, and I'm kind of looking forward to all of them. What did you learn? What were the staff looking forward to?
Well, I personally like Dragon Day. I'm very hopeful we can have Dragon Day. We have a baby coming in the EA. We have the end of winter, frankly. People are excited about that.
Guys, it's January 19th.
And I see Mary is here. Hi, Mary.
Hello.
While we were waiting, we stole one of the president's questions, which was, what are you most looking forward to in the spring semester? Do you want to chime in?
I have to be careful with my boss here. So let's see. So I am looking forward to the fact that my son and his family are moving back to the area. So as of March, my both of my kids and their families will be in the general area. And we'll be able to see my grandkids on a regular
basis. Very jealous, Mary. I'm very jealous.
I know, Martha. I know. It's a big gift. He's been in San Diego and we have barely gotten to see them. So
that's lovely. Thanks for sharing. All right. So we'll get to business because we have a limited time with the president and want to express appreciation for you joining us again, Mary and Martha. First up, we're going to do our committee reports. And as you both know, the president was just here in November, so some committees don't have a lot of updates to give, but we'll go through those, beginning with Andrea and the executive committee.
Well, thank you again for joining us. Gives us a great opportunity to talk about things one-on-one or grouped to group. As the executive committee, we have been working tirelessly trying to figure out guests for our meetings and trying to really fill our calendar for the rest of the term. And we have some interesting and unique speakers coming through for the meetings in the next few months that will take us through the end of the term. So that's been something, and obviously working towards a potential town hall. If that is indeed going to happen, we'll have to be able to see. And also, I don't know if people realize the executive committee works with the Office of Assemblies directly on facilitating questions that come in to the OA and that are relevant for some of our staff. So it's one of those things that there's always stuff going on. We just look forward for the next few months to round out our term.
Thanks, Andrea. Next, we have Ellen with the Communications Outreach and Recognition Committee.
Hello again, welcome. We have been working very diligently on the recognition part of our committee. Right before winter break, we launched the nomination period for our new award for staff integrity and inclusion. That's the award that we revamped to replace what was formerly known as the Opperman Award. And with the winter break, we had a slow start to nominations. We extended our deadline and just closed those nominations last week. And we received 14 very, very strong nominations, really great candidates. And our subcommittee is working through those now to narrow them down before we vote on a winner. And what we found really notable about the candidates is that not only were they all really strong, really great candidates, but we got a very diverse group of candidates. So we got candidates from our New York City offices. We got candidates that were extension specialists. We got candidates from Cornell Online, from eCornell. So really like embracing the one Cornell and bringing all the employees together. And that was really exciting for us. And we're really happy and excited since this is the first launch of that award. So we should have a winner in the next few weeks, and we'll share that information with both of you so that you know, and we'll be planning for that. And then pretty much right after that award is announced, we'll be launching into the George Peter Award again, because it has been a year now since our last winner, Frank Cantone. So we'll be issuing a call for nominations for that. So we'll be busy throughout the remainder of the semester working on recognition. And we've been partnering with Ashley Miller in Human Resources to kind of coordinate our schedules to make sure we're not overlapping with like the President's Excellence Awards and other kind of recognition events that are going on campus. So we want there to be opportunities for employees throughout the year. So we're working on kind of tightening our schedule and making sure that that works. In addition to that, our other big project has been for communications and outreach. We have a subcommittee that's working on ideas for a relaunch of the Employee Assembly website.
which the OA office informed us that their website will be updated for a new Drupal version. And since they have to do an update for that, we thought we could also do some update on the content. So we're just doing some brainstorming, seeing how we can use that website to better serve our constituents. And that's it.
My radiator just started making a lot of noise. Give me one second to turn it off.
Yet another reason why we love being in Day Hall.
Day Hall is, yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
That's it for me. Any questions?
Thank you, Ellen. Next one is the Benefits and Policy Committee, which is chaired by Brian Goodell, who's out on medical leave right now. So I can give you a quick update. They met once since we last saw you, President Pollack, and they won't be meeting until Brian's back in February. At the last meeting, they had some conversations about the retirement contribution policy, catastrophic leave donation policy, and whistleblower protection policy. And Lauren Jacoby has been attending meetings, which has been very helpful. It just allows the committee to have instant answers sometimes and not have to do a lot of work that's unnecessary. So that's been a really great partnership. And that's all I have for benefits and policy right now. Next is the Employee Welfare Committee, and that's chaired by Christine.
Thank you. Hello, welcome. Since we last met, we had closed out our term and then spent one meeting brainstorming about initiatives, kind of hearing, reminding ourselves what we've heard over the past year in terms of welfare considerations and concerns of the staff, and brainstorming about initiatives for the spring. We are supporting and giving kind of feedback and support and encouragement to Brandon and his subcommittee, who is working on the onboarding enhancement process in partnership with the onboarding office. And we've just launched a conversation that is exciting for me. It's kind of inspiring about kind of working at Cornell and moving forward, how do we frame up what that looks like and the opportunities that are present to kind of emphasize humanity in our work? And is there ways in which we can provide opportunities to staff to think about new ways? So it's a really interesting conversation, just really kicked off, and I appreciate the committee very much for agreeing to participate in that kind of a conversation, which it's, can be a little risky, but I appreciated their honesty and willingness.
I look forward to hearing more about that. Mary and I have talked a little bit about how you create a more compassionate workplace. There was an incident, I don't need to go into all the details, but last semester where a message went up on our, it was on our testing website. And I quickly wrote to Mary and said, you know, if we just change the wording on this just a little bit, instead of it sounding harsh, it conveys the same information, it conveys that we actually care about our students and faculty and staff. And I know everybody's just, you know, there was no ill intent. People are just faster. I do this too. You put things out. So I think I'm really glad to see people talking about that. I think it's a really important thing that all of us can do.
Great. Thank you.
Next, we have Education and Development Committee, chaired by Marcy.
Hi, yes, thank you. Just briefly, as you know, 2021 had one of the highest rates of the ED, employee education degree program. 35 people graduated. We had two actually in my general area, so that was exciting. We got their master's degrees while being full-time veterinary technicians. Blows my mind. Also, we had Linda Crowell-Howell, who's actually here, who director of HR analytics. Just wanted to get a general information of how many staff actually hold higher education degrees, and perhaps you know, if there was any way that we could work on that. And one thing we found out was they get that information from Workday, and a lot. about half of the people of staff haven't filled out their workday profile, so it's hard to get that exact amount. So the thought was perhaps have a push, we haven't done it yet, but to have a push in to promote, you know, filling out your workday profile so that, you know, they could get a little more information, because they also use that information, we found out, for promotion, or not promotions, but for from promoting, for getting, for, you know, gigs, and, you know, HR development, HR, you know, different ways to get them. We also discussed recruiters, that was my word. We also discussed different recognition programs and platforms. There's a staff development day, I guess, which was originally in January. It was gonna be, it's been postponed to the spring. And then Alan Mittman and Emily Ivory were working on a spotlight for disability accommodations for staff who are taking classes. Future meetings, we hope to explore the data we have collected from peer institutions and to see how we can promote or make recommendations for future programs. Any questions? Comments? Thank you.
Thanks, Marcy. And our last standing committee is the Elections Committee with Marin Cherry as chair.
Hello, yeah. So I wanted to start this out this briefing with just a massive thank you to Jamie, who led the process for the special election through the fall. I have recently returned from parental leave, and so I am taking over for the spring and still getting a sense of what's going on. The committee has not yet met this semester, but will in the coming weeks to discuss our spring election schedule. We have at least 11 currently held seats coming up for election, as well as potentially, I think, one or two vacant seats as well. So we'll be clarifying what seats are going to be up for election and which ones are going to be open, and sort of taking the first steps to making sure that we can keep our election rolling and happen on time this spring.
Thanks, Marin. It is great to have you back. And Jamie did a fantastic job last fall. That is for sure. So President Pollack, that is all of our committees. I believe we're going to turn it over to you for some remarks.
Yes, thank you so much. Thanks to everyone for being here. Thanks for doing all you're doing. I know there are a lot of questions, so I will try to keep this brief. But you know, I do want to spend a few minutes bringing people up to date. I want, first of all, to wish you all a very happy, very healthy new year. I hope it's a new year that's smoother sailing than the last two, one where we have only the good kinds of life challenges. Want to apologize to those of you who came to the town hall last week. I'm going to spend just a couple of minutes repeating some of what I've said there, because the pandemic does, of course, continue to be at the forefront of people's concerns. I know that the last month and a half have been frustrating. It really just felt like we were about to turn the corner, and then wham, this incredibly transmissible Omicron virus appeared. It might feel like we're back where we started, but really we are in a very different place than we were 2 years ago. Because right now, today, we have the tools, we have the understanding that we didn't have in March of 2020. We know now how COVID spreads, and we do have ways to mitigate that spread, most notably vaccination, but also things like high quality masks. We have better tools for dealing with the infection, and in particular, there are a number of emerging new drugs. And I think at this point, we realize that we're always going to be living with this virus, just like we live with other viruses, but at least over time, we're going to be able to live with it in much less limiting ways. So as I said last week, we're an academic community, and as such, we're committed to following the sciences. That's what we did back in the fall of 2020, when we brought our students back to campus safely and successfully by adapting very strict masking and testing and behavioral policies. You saw the science come into play again back in December, when it was these advanced surveillance and testing models that we were one of the first locations in the United States to demonstrate the speed at which the Omicron variant can race through populations, even fully vaccinated populations. I remember sitting and talking with Mike Kotlikoff, the provost, after we'd seen the beginning of that, what they call vertical rise in the number of infections. And we were saying to each other, you know, the CDC is saying there's only, I don't know, 43 cases of Omicron nationally. Could this really be Omicron, what we're seeing here? How could that be? But, you know, sure enough, we went out and we did the sequencing, and that's what we found. Followed the science again. I mean, it's what we're doing now with our plan for spring 2022 that has us learning to minimize and yet live with the inevitable viral spread amongst a fully vaccinated and what will be a fully boosted campus population. And as I said last week, I stress that word inevitable. We simply understand that we're not going to be able to eliminate the SARS-CoV-2 virus. It's spread into human and animal populations throughout the world, and it's part of our global ecosystem, unfortunately. And yes, there remains a lot that's uncertain about the virus. There is at least strong evidence, though, that the Omicron variant is less likely to lead to serious illness and hospitalization than prior variants, especially among a fully vaccinated and boosted population like ours at Cornell, where, you know, to date we've predominantly seen asymptomatic or relatively mild illness. I'll give you some very good news. Of the 400 students that arrived yesterday, only 2% tested positive, which is lower than what our projections were. So it's only one day, but fingers crossed. We do recognize our responsibility to do what we can to protect the more vulnerable individuals in our campus community and in the greater community. So going forward, we're going to focus on preventing serious illness. And we're going to do that in part by mitigating the spread of the virus to the extent possible. We're going to shift from just counting cases, we know we're going to have cases, to minimizing serious illness. And we're going to take seriously our other responsibility, as we have all along, which is to provide the best possible educational experience for our students. Our students thrive. They come to Cornell. They thrive in the world-class residential experience we provide. And our society in the long term needs the teaching, research, and engagement that we provide here at Cornell. Now, our modeling. I'm going to be clear. Our modeling tells us to expect a very large number of COVID-19 cases early in the semester among returning students. The modeling said perhaps as many as 2,000 cases or more. We hope lower given what we're seeing so far, but in any case, a large number. But the modeling also predicts very little serious disease across faculty, staff, and students throughout the semester if we all follow the steps we've laid out. So we are requiring all of our students to do pre-departure testing. We've sent them antigen tests. We're using antigen tests in this case because you get very quick turnaround, and it's important that students test as close to their departure time as possible. And then we're going to test them again on arrival. And that repeated testing is both going to let us identify students who may have become infected during their travel, and it'll also significantly diminish the impact of the fact that antigen tests may be less sensitive than PCR testing. We will continue to be using PCR testing for other purposes here on campus throughout the semester. So that's number one, pre-arrival and on-arrival testing. Second, as I think everybody knows by now, we're going to start the semester with 2 weeks of virtual instruction from January 24th to February 4th. Why are we doing this? Well, because it gives us a critical period for students to isolate safely without missing classes. We're telling students, if you test positive, stay home until your isolation period is over. If you come here and test, you've got to isolate. And so, you know, because we've always seen these big peaks at the beginning of the semester, we want to make it feasible for students, to everyone, to get those first 2 weeks of education while we get past that peak. Also, by starting online, we can have a staggered return for students. We've told students come anytime from when the dorms opened, residence halls opened a couple of days ago, through the start of classes on February 4th. And that should make it more feasible for us to manage isolation of students who come back to campus. Frankly, also students who have trouble coming back because flights get canceled, as so many flights are being canceled today. That will also make it easier. And then finally, during those 2 weeks, there's going to be a moratorium on student events. We're going to make rooms for students to get online and socially distance outside their residence hall available. The libraries are going to be open, but with reduced density. Dining will, of course, be available to students. They have to eat, but we're going to make it grab and go for those first 2 weeks to further reduce risk. Now, there are a lot more details about our spring semester plans, but rather than go through them all here, I'll just point you to the COVID website where it's all listed. I do just want to take 1 minute, though, to talk about masks, because I get so many questions about masks. We're creating a website with detailed information about that, too. There's going to be a website that will talk about what the different types of masks are, how they differ, where to use them, where to get them. What's most important to know is that the science now says that high quality masks, so surgical masks in particular, N95, KN95, and KF94 masks are much more effective in terms of providing protection, both for the wearer and for the people they're around. We are going to make them available to everyone who needs them, and we're going to strongly encourage their use. So look, I strongly believe that the measures that we've put in place after lots of discussion and lots of consultation with scientists and lots of sort of interrogation of the data, these measures represent the best possible available response to the situation we're facing. But I want to acknowledge and even emphasize there is no perfect solution, and there's not a solution available that every member of our community will agree on. Every day I get emails saying, you're doing too much, you're doing too little, you're going too fast, you're going too slow, here's what I would do if I was in your position. Our answer, as always, is that we're very clear on what our goals are, and we're trying to follow the science in achieving those goals. And based on the evidence we have and our assessment of it, the steps that we've laid out are the ones that will help protect Cornellians and the surrounding community while enabling our students to have the in-person residential educational experience that's so important to them and to our mission. And you know, before I turn to the Q&A, I do just want to take a moment to thank everyone in the community, as I've been trying to do for the past almost 2 years now. Your efforts to deal with the pandemic mean that it really isn't all pandemic all the time. And you know, you asked me before we got going what I was looking forward to most in the coming semester. And it's that long list of things that's still happening at Cornell, the differences that we're still making in our education and our research and in our engagement. So I again, just wanna thank all of you, everyone, for everything you've done, both individually and through the work of the EA over these past 2 years to enable us to continue to pursue our mission. Thank you all. And I, Jessica, I'm happy to turn to questions.
Great, thank you very much, President Pollack. So Andrea is going to ask the questions that were pre-submitted. Okay. So I'll turn it over to her.
There are quite a few, and you've answered some of them in the midst of your introduction. So that actually is good. The all ever present question about masks, where they are, how can we get them? So that's an important, thank you for that information.
And let me just say in terms of where to get them, just so people know, they're gonna be available at all the testing sites. And also some departments will have them available. So if you want one, check with your supervisor. And then if needed, just go to any of the test sites. They will be available there.
Great, perfect. The next question is a little lengthy, but it would be a massive understatement to say that the last few weeks and months have been exceptionally exhausting on top of the continuously accumulating fatigue of trying to survive the pandemic. Feels like we haven't taken a full breath in about 2 years. I know campus groups are all feeling the strain, not just staff. And are there any considerations or plans to address campus community morale in the coming weeks? That is the first part of the question. And then are there plans to offer additional support to those individuals that were responsible for executing their activities for fellow campus community members?
Well, look, I mean, there is no question that the pandemic has been exhausting and distressing to members of our community at Cornell, distressing to the larger community, frankly, distressing to just about everyone around the world. And I also think, I'm not a psychologist, but I think it's been especially hard to grapple with the arrival of Omicron. It really felt like we had turned the corner on things. We were starting to do what felt like, at least I was starting to do what felt like my normal life again. And then everything changed. I'm not sure what kinds of plans the person who asked this question had in mind. We are trying to continue to find ways to support our staff. We're trying to find ways to continue to recognize them. We have the Excellence Awards in private format. We're taking things virtual when we can. We're doing a virtual version of Take Your Child to Work Day in April. You know, I think the challenge is to navigate this, to provide support while not adding yet more burden to employees by developing programs that support other employees. you know, I wish I had a magic wand to make this all go away, but I really don't.
Bertha, let me also add that, you know, I think most of you know, we tried to have a version of, so we have a lot of programs for staff here. If you've worked other places, I mean, there's something every couple of months. And so in the fall, we have always done the football game and the dinner. And because of the circumstances, we couldn't do the dinner. We tried something different. It just didn't really work. So we usually have another one of those events around the winter sports. And we agreed with Omicron the way it was that it probably wouldn't work. But what we are going to do through the January and February timeframe is we're seeking information now about units that we want to celebrate and recognize. And so we've got calls out to a number of places. This goes to the second question, so that we can really lift up the kind of heroic efforts of student service, you know, some of the people in student services and other places, and just celebrate them together, you know, through some awareness through our web and other ways of getting that information out. So we think that that's important, that we see each other through all of this, and that we take a moment and say thank you.
Thanks, Mary.
Next question is, the expectations of staff have shifted dramatically over the last 10 years, and then obviously in the last two. While I realize that the complexity of Cornell make it hard to have universal change, what would you say that Cornell should look to change about job expectation in the coming years to meet and exceed expectations of staff?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a really important and good question. And I appreciate the recognition that there isn't universal change. There isn't going to be a one size fits all solution here. We're a really big organization. We have people who do just an enormous range of work. And what the new normal means will of necessity be different for different people. I think about this a lot, and I keep coming back to the idea of flexibility. Because I think what the pandemic has taught us is how uncertain the world can be, and how our responsibilities and the conditions of our work and the conditions of our lives outside of work can change almost overnight in response to circumstances that are totally out of anyone's control. And so I think employers, all employers, including Cornell, are going to need to continue over time to learn how to be more flexible to address the needs of all of their employees. And at the same time, I think employees are going to need to continue to learn how to be more flexible to address the needs of their workplace. We're all just going to have to learn how to deal with uncertainty, how to deal with change, and employers are going to need to learn how to help employees have the kind of adaptiveness that's needed.
Good. Sort of, it goes into the next question is, what would you like to see the EA focus our efforts on for this coming semester?
You know, I came in at the very end of a conversation that I thought was really interesting, and it was about telling Cornell's story. Meaning to minimize the incredible stress and incredible frustration of the pandemic, I really encourage the EA to help us focus on what's positive about working at Cornell. I mean, everyone in the whole world has dealt with this stress. It's just an incredibly large and difficult problem. And I dare say it's affected, you know, literally every human being alive over the age, probably even under the age of two, in one way or another. And there still remain challenges. But I really do feel like as a community working together, we have done a pretty good job in dealing with the pandemic. Not easy, incredibly difficult. It'd be really good to help spread that word. Talent shortages abound. It's really difficult. All of you know, I'm sure it's affected all of you, to be understaffed. We all need to be working hard to recruit and retain talented people. So if the EA can help tell people about what it is about and you enjoy about your job, not sugarcoat the pandemic, but sort of suggest to talented people you know that they apply to jobs that are open and why those are good jobs, help us onboard new employees. I think that would be an enormously valuable thing for the EA and for our employees and for the university as a whole.
So the next question sort of flows into that. And not only for promotion of Cornell for outside, but would Cornell, a Cornell job fair for internal staff candidates ever be considered to bring together departments, units seeking to fill positions with current Cornell employees looking to advance or change their career in person or virtually in person?
You know, I think it's a great question. I know there is support for it. I know there's been a focus on promoting from within, and that is something we want to foster. I am going to literally put it in my deck of cards for the next CHRO, because I think it's a perfect question to ask them. How do they think about this? How would they manage this?
I do want to just say that right now we're topping over 40%, over, and going fast. All openings are being filled from inside. So the opportunities are here to move around, and we're working as hard as we can to make the identification of those opportunities and then the ability to apply for them as easy as possible. So it's already happening. I think the idea of taking, we used to call it seed. Remember the program that we had where you could and maybe putting a job element to it might be a great idea for the next person.
And so that's perfectly going into the next question, which is, please, could you discuss the search for the new VP and CHRO and how it's going?
Yeah, so the search has gotten underway. It's being chaired by my chief of staff, Kelly Cunningham. If any of you know Kelly, you'll know that the search is in incredibly good hands. We have hired a search firm to help us ensure that we identify the very top candidates from around the country. This search firm is also going to conduct stakeholder meetings with a wide variety of people. In fact, I've recently asked that they include a meeting with the EA to get your input. We're not going to be able to recreate Mary. Let me embarrass her and use this as yet another opportunity to thank her for all she's done for 25 years. It's really quite remarkable. We're not going to be able to replace her, but Cornell is a great place to work, and I am confident that we're going to find a successor whom we'll be proud to have as our next CHRO.
So we just moving on to some questions about vaccination boosters as well as enforcement. How will vaccination and booster requirements be for staff be enforced? And is there any thought of additional clinics available on campus?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think everybody knows that all faculty, staff, and students were required to be either fully vaccinated, so with the first two, or have an approved medical or religious exemption by January 18th, which was yesterday. And I am really pleased to say that there were only a tiny number of employees in the end who did not comply, either get an exemption or get vaccinated. And unfortunately, that tiny number of employees were terminated. When it comes to boosters, January 31st is the deadline for uploading documentation of your booster shot or else applying for a medical or religious exemption. I want to be clear, it's January 31st if you're eligible by January 31st. If you got, let's say your second mRNA shot less than 6 months ago, your deadline doesn't happen until you're eligible 6 months from that date. Also, if you've already received a medical or religious exemption for the original vaccine, you don't need to reapply. You only need to reapply if it's a new request. Please upload your documentation. I know it took me several weeks and then I thought, oh yeah, I need to upload my booster documentation. Please upload it. If you don't upload a booster documentation or apply for an exemption, you're going to get a notice saying that you're not in compliance, and you're going to be given a period of time in which you need to come into a compliance. Until you do, if you work on campus, you're going to be placed in required testing, and ultimately failure to come into compliance will result in a responsive action from the university up to and including termination. So please upload your booster documentation. If you haven't gotten your booster, go get one. If you need to apply for an exemption, medical or religious exemption, do that. As for clinics, we did offer some back in the fall. They were very underutilized. And so at this point, we're not planning to add additional on-campus clinics. We need to prioritize the work of the really overworked staff at Cornell Health to provide care both for COVID cases that arise and for the typical wintertime illnesses that we always see. Boosters are available at local pharmacies. Knowing that this question would be asked, I went online this morning and took a quick look just out of curiosity. There are lots of available slots next week at the local pharmacies. I don't think there's any today. I didn't look at all of them, but there's plenty starting in the weekend and through next week. And the county is having a booster clinic up at the mall this Saturday. And I checked and there's lots of slots there too. So you should be able to get a booster shot without any trouble.
Martha, can I just add? So unlike the vaccines where we had people who I think were trying to decide whether they kind of agreed with the concept of vaccinating, that's not what we think is happening with boosters. We think it's a combination of people got it and just haven't gotten around to uploading it. We could really use your help to remind people if they had, because I think for some people it was actually hard to upload the vaccine data and so they're kind of pulled away from doing it. All they need to do is go into a test site and they'll help them put it in. That's one of the services at the test site. It makes it much, much easier. So we think that's the majority. We're doing great. The numbers are coming down real, real fast as we remind people that they need to put them in. But do remind people when you talk to them that if they're just dreading doing it because maybe they don't have, you know, a smartphone that they can take the picture on and then they have to toggle, whatever, don't worry about it. Just go to a test site, ask them for help. They'll get it up in just a matter of minutes for them.
And while they're at it, maybe they could do the workday upload that Marcy wants them to do.
There you go. What concrete recommendations would you have for staff who have to enforce student mask wearing? Students had gotten very lax last fall when reminding violators is not a casual thing for frontline staff who work in public places.
Yeah, I agree, this is a really hard and tricky question. I saw this happen in the fall, and I have to be honest, not just with students. When I was on campus, I'd walk around and I'd see students and faculty and staff not wearing their mask or very often, you know, below their chin, indoors. Outdoors is a different matter. It is awkward. It is awkward to confront someone who's not wearing their mask. If you do that, I know it's hard, but I encourage you to just be, you know, very matter of fact and polite and friendly. You know, could you please wear your mask correctly? We all really need to do our part. Meanwhile, we are centrally going to do everything we can to continue to remind the community about the importance of proper mask wearing, about the right way to wear masks, about why it's so important. I don't really have a great answer for you. I think it's something we as a society, I know when I flew a couple of months ago, I just couldn't believe the people walking around the airports with their mask dangling off their ear. And I didn't feel comfortable going up and confronting them. But, you know, you just sort of have to do it if you can, and we will do our part centrally by continuing to get the message out.
And can I just say, if you have someone who is persistently not wearing their mask around you, then depart the situation. Don't stay and turn it over to somebody above you to handle. Don't put yourself in jeopardy because somebody is deciding to take a stance at your expense. Just depart. You know, you can ask them once. See, your mask is down here. You remember it's got to go up here. And if you get headache, just say, you know, I'm going to depart and let your supervisor know.
So the next couple of questions are talking a bit about some of the concerns with boosters. Mm-hmm. I commend the university's efforts to get as many, you know, for the vaccine mandate, but is concerned about the effects that mandate has on staff, specifically with the booster, as well as other having adverse reactions. Many staff have felt feeling very severe flu-like symptoms for days or using up their own PTO in the event that they have a similar experience at the booster. Is there any data collection of staff about this being tracked?
Yeah, well, I'm gonna turn to Mary for a moment about the data.
I appreciate this question because yes, getting vaccinated and boosted is just so important to our community's health and our ability to fulfill our mission and move forward. I do want to remind people, because it was 2 years ago, but it feels like, 100 years ago, back in 2020, we did a one-time addition of 10 days to everyone's sick day bank. And at that point, we just didn't know how the illness would be handled. And then after that, after those 10 days were added, New York State implemented COVID pay, which doesn't come out of the PTO bank for people who test positive or who need to be in quarantine. So most COVID-related absences are not coming from the sick day banks, which have been both boosted by 10. Also, we do offer up to 4 hours of pay to go get the vaccine and booster. I also want to say, yeah, it's absolutely the case that people have reactions. Some people, more or less will feel unwell after their vaccine or booster. In most cases where there are side effects, they do subside in a day or two. And if you need to take sick time for that, you are expected to use your PTO for that. Mary, I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
Yeah, so we track the time off banks, and we're not seeing a draining of the time off, the HAP banks at all. Newer people don't have as much to start with. And so if they get sick, but that's always been true, right? When you're new to a position, sometimes, things happen and your banks drop quickly. But for anybody with any length of service, we're not seeing that happen. The other thing is that, the booster does not create the same reaction as the full shots did. You might have a reaction, but no, you ask the question. We are not hearing about people who are out for weeks and weeks. That's not to say there aren't, some who, who have that sort of reaction. And the best thing I can say is if you're asked that question, imagine how that person would feel if they do get COVID. If their reaction to the booster is that strong, imagine their reaction if they get sick. So again, these are individual decisions that people need to make for their own health and well-being and their families, as well as for their community here. And I just want to say, Jamie made a point that the COVID pay is not well understood. You are right. So the COVID pay option that we had was back in the day. So again, these are things that Martha said this several times, things are changing. We put that in right in the beginning of the pandemic when we were trying very hard not to have anybody lose pay. But if you weren't working, and you're non-exempt, we had you code that time as hours not worked due to COVID, and it was COVID pay. That is almost never the case anymore. We had a little tiny flurry when we quick had to send the students home, but for the most part, we've got more work than we know what to do with. So that's not our problem anymore. And Jamie, we're actually thinking about hiding that option because people are using it for the wrong reasons. And instead we'll be putting up the, if you are home and positive, you'll have a different code to use.
And there was a follow-up question sort of related to booster shots and concerns about the future with like a fourth or a fifth or other boosters going forward and the potential effect on a person's immune system. Are those all going to be factored in moving forward for any global university decisions about where we go from here?
Yeah, in all of our planning and decisions, we take very seriously the science and the advice of medical experts. And I can tell you that to date, we have had no discussions about additional vaccination requirements beyond this first booster, which has been so strongly recommended by public health authorities.
And I would just say, we don't know yet, right? As Martha said, we'll have to follow the science, but many of us get an annual flu shot. We get one every year. So I think that what is happening here is that this is brand new and it's scary and we haven't been able to understand it. And that's, I think, confusing some of our feeling. And then I just want to note, Adrian made a point of saying, he was vaccinated, he got COVID, now he feels, he has mixed emotions about getting the booster. you know, you should talk to your health professional, and if the health professional advises against it, that's what the exemptions are for. But I just want to acknowledge the fact that this is it. We, you know, we're all learning together. And for some people, you know, they're just trying to understand this. And when we added the booster, kind of gets them thinking again. So understood.
Thank you. I do want to know, it is 1:15, President Pollack, and I don't know what your calendar looks like.
I could stay another 5 minutes-ish.
Okay, thank you.
Perfect. The start of the semester has reemphasized how important it is for our staff, students, and faculty to have high-speed internet at home, not just for their support of Cornell's mission, but for their children to participate in school. Recent studies have shown that 15% of the household in Tompkins and neighboring counties do not have broadband internet connect, and the minimum price is about $60 a month. What can Cornell do to boost the efforts to increase the access to and competitive pricing of high-speed internet for our community?
Well, now I'm especially glad that I stayed, because I was really hoping you would ask me this question, because I'm really proud of some work that I did last year, almost a year and a half ago, after the pandemic started. I was asked to serve on the Reimagine New York Commission. And we met for quite a while, virtually, of course, and we came up with a number of recommendations to the state about important investments. These were in a number of different areas. We looked at telehealth. In fact, I was a co-chair of the telehealth subcommittee. We looked at workforce development. We looked at support for small business in the arts. But the committee as a whole, our number one recommendation to the governor was that we need as a state to provide better and more affordable broadband service to New Yorkers. And I am really, really pleased to say that a number of the recommendations of the committee did make it into Governor Hochul's 2022 State of the State report. And that included a proposed $1 billion investment over 10 years, I think it's 10 years, I'd have to go back and look, that's what I'm remembering, to bring affordable broadband to New Yorkers and to basically transform the state's digital infrastructure. If you get a copy of her report, she's calling this the Connect All, Connect ALL initiative. If you really wanna look it up, it's on pages 120 and 121 of her report. Her budget speech was given yesterday. I haven't yet seen how this plays out in the budget speech, but I want to affirm that when we interact with the state, we are going to continue to stress the importance of this program of broadband for all, just continue to stress how critical that is to our region and to our employees. If you get the opportunity to talk to a state representative, you know, push Connect All. Tell them how critically important this is.
We were able to get through a good chunk of that, but one of the questions is are there any plans for another retirement incentive?
Not at this time. As Mary said, if anything, we need you all to stay and work. We love you. Please don't retire.
Okay, good. And did we lose Mary? Is she still
here?
Okay. How many employees were impacted by the vacation time reset? Do we have any data on that?
We do. I actually just looked at it. So every year, about 13.5% of the employees lose some number of hours or days in their vacation. Because we always cut, remember? We always cut and go back to the max. Used to be in October, but this year we changed it permanently to the end of December, so people would be able to access those days during the holiday period. And so we've run it about, you know, for the last few years at about 13.5, a little bit over. The rolling average is about 13.6, actually. We then went for 2 years without a cutter. So it was actually 2 years and 3 months. And the percent that had something lost, and not many had much lost, but was just over 14%. So little under 1% difference between our rolling average and this past 2 years and 3 months. So running right around on track from previous times, which is a testament to the length of time people had to try to bring those banks down. And I think people did a good job of that.
I probably do have to run because I have a 1:30 meeting that I need to get ready for. But if it's okay, I will with that. Then thank you all. As always, I'm just in awe of the fact that you have time to put in to help the employee assembly, which is so important in addition to all your regular jobs. Stay well, and I'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I also forgot at the beginning to remind you all that Mary will be coming separately in March so that we can get some separate time alone with her. I think that's March 2nd, I think is her scheduled visit with us. So thanks for those great questions, everyone. I think they were really wide ranging. And I hope if your question was asked, you found the answer helpful.
We really only had two that we weren't able to get through.
So it's 1:22 and we can move to new business. So EA members, if you have anything you want to discuss, feel free to put your hand up in the reactions panel. We can also take motions to adjourn, but at this point it's open. Brandon?
Well, being that it's pretty quiet out there, I might as well make a motion to adjourn.
We have a motion to adjourn. Do we have a second? Ellen?
Second.
And Jamie.
Oh, and Jamie too? Yes, thank you, Jamie. So we do this by unanimous consent, and unless I hear any opposition in the next moment, we are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.